Blog Talk Radio.
Well, welcome, folks, once again to PWT Talks NXT. I am your host. I'm Kelly Wells, and I really wanted to be here in a more timely fashion, but I had some follies trying to find my headphone cable. It all started during the pre-show with Zoe Stark versus Toni Storm. I didn't even get to see anything but the last 2 minutes of that match because Peacock was acting up on me. So, yeah, that's my night. Between those two things, we did see night one of TakeOver Stand and Deliver. Did it deliver? Did it stand? We will find out tonight. That I mentioned, I'm your host, Kelly Wells. You can find me all over social media at Spooky Milk or Spooky Milk Games. We're going to talk some main event, and we will work pretty much backwards from there. Why not straight backwards? It'll just be easier that way, unless I change my mind, which I probably will. Let's go to an email. You can email us at pwtorchnxt@gmail.com. I typically don't read them right away, but it kind of relates to a little bit of everything tonight. This is from our good buddy Kevin Cantani. Salutations, gents. Wowee, that was one heck of a first night. I think all of the matches were given ample time to tell their stories, and the booking decisions were the right ones, in my opinion. Before we transition into night two, what was one thing you thought went really well, a match decision, action spot, etc., and what is one thing that didn't hit the mark for you? Thanks, as always. Office hours are now over. The Professor, P.S. Go VIP, Kevin P. Cantani, Ph.D. I read this first because we'll kind of cover what we thought went right and what went wrong. I strongly disagree with one booking decision, but we will get there. It is the only one that I picked incorrectly last week, and I saw the writing on the wall and still thought they should have gone another way with it. But we'll talk about why I thought so and still think so a little bit later. I think it'll be fine. They're not like, it's not a massive problem, I don't think, but I think it could have been better. So we will get to that in a bit. Let's talk Io Shirai versus Raquel Gonzalez. This was the main event and yet was the second shortest match of the show. Normally, opener and closer are the longest matches on NXT. This week, the opener and closer were the shortest. So we got Raquel going over, new NXT Women's Champion. You knew it probably had to happen. Like, they gave us doubt, and they gave us ample reason to believe it could be either woman coming out of the championship match with that belt. But so much had been put into Raquel Gonzalez. So much had been put into making her this monster. And when you start to humanize a monster and she starts taking losses, it's a problem. And it's hard to come back from. Braun Strowman would never have been a world champion, even now after all these years, if not for Roman Reigns pulling out of WrestleMania, because they had him take a few ill-advised losses too early. That's, you got to be careful with monsters, even if you're not sure they can carry it right away. I agree with her being given the ball, see what she can do with it. I don't know how it's going to go. I'm not completely certain about this, but I'm very, very eager to see how it goes. And it's the same thing I would have done. If you protect somebody this much, it's the same thing I would have done. Now, what I can't wait for is Dakota Kai to turn on her and win that championship. So Raquel Gonzalez, 12:55 over Io Shirai. We have got an unusual gang of idiots on hand with me tonight. Let's first go to the usual Nate Lindberg. Who are you, and what did you think of the main event?
Wow, I'm actually not unusual. That's cool. I'm Nate Lindberg. You can find me on Twitter at Nate Lindberg. And I do the hits and misses, which I actually already have up on the site for night one, so check that out. And I'll have some up for night two. And I also do the Alt Perspective SmackDown report, but I can't actually do it this Friday. Tom will be picking that up for me. I think it's the first time he's going to be covering a main roster show. He's excited about it. So check that out on Friday alongside Wade's report. The main event. I am right there with you when it comes to wondering how this reign's going to go. I think that the booking decision was absolutely the right thing to do. Io Shirai's had a great title reign. It was like 300 plus days, dominant champion. I would have I mean, I would have been okay if she won here, in, you know, for her, and kind of a little bit selfishly, maybe a little bit longer of a run with her. But I agree. I think this is the time to do it with Gonzalez. She has been booked stupidly strong throughout the course of this year. I mean, not to mention she also had, you know, the clean pin over, or just about clean pin over Io Shirai at War Games. So she's been protected, and like you said, you know, taking too many losses before winning that belt is going to define you down. So I think this was the right time to do it in terms of the booking, but at the same time, I still do kind of get those. I've got a little bit of reservations. Like, it was either last Wednesday or it was on Wrestling Night in America with Tom. We were talking about how she kind of has some shades of Rhea Ripley, and absolutely, she certainly has some shades of Rhea Ripley in her, you know, with that character and whatnot. But it's, I don't feel like she's quite at that same level that Rhea Ripley was last year. Actually, as a matter of fact, it wasn't Wrestling Night in America because it was Tom, I think, that said that he feels like she's at the level Rhea Ripley was during the second Mae Young Classic. And I agreed with that. I kind of feel like that's where she's at. And that's not a bad thing. She's still in a great spot then. But I'm in her camp. I'm rooting for her. I want her to succeed and I want her to be a dominant champion. Don't get me wrong, but I'm a little concerned to see how this run's going to go. I think you're probably also right too. We're going to probably see something going on with Dakota Kai here and a little bit of a flip and all that. But, whether or not Dakota Kai wins the title or not, if that is the case, who knows? But that does seem like it's something that's probably going to happen, especially with a lot of the some of the interaction before. It wasn't interaction; it was a video package with Dakota Kai tonight. Just the way that she was talking up Gonzalez, just kind of her verbiage and things, kind of planted a seed in my head that there might be something going on there too. So overall though, I thought this is a fantastic match. Like I said, I'm just a little bit worried about this reign, but I'm in her corner.
Yeah, she's, I think even saying the second Mae Young Classic for Rhea is iffy. Cause Rhea kind of had, she really, really understood what she had to do from a character standpoint. I that was her real coming out party. She looked clueless and shiftless in the first Mae Young Classic. Like, I'm not afraid to say I absolutely hated her in that. I thought she was bad. And I didn't see what they – like, it was clear they saw something in her, and it was clear she was going to win a match or two because they kept saying, Rhea Ripley, what a great future star she is. And I was like, she should bring some of that to the act. Because there's nothing here. The difference in what she was able to do between those first two was so stunning. And she really came a long way in a small amount of time. Now, we've seen Raquel for at least that amount of time. And she's improved, but she doesn't connect to the fans on nearly the level that Rhea does. And Rhea's just got kind of a genuine cool that I'm not sure Raquel maybe has. And that's not something that can usually be taught. That's something that's usually there or it's not. And maybe they'll find the right character for her, like the right exact volume for her character, and it'll work. But I think that I just don't know that I see her ever getting to that level. But you don't have to get to that level to be somebody that they put into a championship match at WrestleMania within a couple of years to be an extremely valuable piece to the company. Big question for me here. What does Io do next? Because she's largely defined by the championship. Let's go to special guest Bruce Hazelwood.
Well, thank you for having me on. I just want to commend you, Kelly, when you reached out to me for putting in a nice Salute Your Shorts reference to me. And that just had me right away. I knew I couldn't say no to whatever you were going to ask me. And I had the Camp on Awana song stuck in my head. So thanks for doing that.
I call people donkey lips on a very regular basis. Like, I rarely put it in print, but I say it in life to people all the time. I don't think I say it on the podcast, but I say it like in my genuine life, like kind of too much.
Well, you hit me right in the nostalgia with that one, so that was great.
And now it's stuck in my head.
There you go. So I think, let me quickly touch on Io Shirai, as you were just touching on, Kelly. One of my colleagues, one of my friends mentioned that with WWE's and NXT's inability to have more than one Japanese woman kind of on the card and on the card at the top, with Sarray, the former Sarray, being introduced tonight next to Stephanie McMahon, there's talk that Io's probably done with NXT. And on Twitter, that seems to be the overwhelming sentiment from a lot of people putting out, like, thank you Io tweets and kind of appreciation threads and whatnot. So they might, like you said, there's really nothing left for her. And if she's all defined by the title, she'll probably get that. She'll probably have a rematch at least because she was such a dominant and long reigning champion. But yeah, there's just not much left for her to do, unless of course they do what they always do and put her in a random tag team as she goes to fight Raquel for the title again. That seems to be the booking for all women's divisions in WWE these days. But on Raquel, it's interesting. She's been with WWE for a while. She kind of turned into the Raquel Gonzalez character a little over a year ago, I want to say. She was Reyna before, and I almost forgot that she was Reyna Gonzalez before her name changed. But I'd say out of, particularly NXT, I'd argue that out of everybody over the last 12 to 14 months, she's shown the most improvement in the ring and on the mic. And that bodes well moving forward, but I'm not, as you two were saying, kind of, is she at the level or the ability to where she can be the one carrying a match as a champion? And that doesn't necessarily have to be the case with everybody. You know, you brought up Braun Strowman earlier. He was a champion for a while. He can't carry a tune, let alone a match. So it's just, like you were saying, you don't have to be the top star to be, you know, in a WrestleMania, in a main event, at the B pay-per-views, the A pay-per-views. And to your thing about Rhea Ripley and Raquel Gonzalez, what you say about the presence and the kind of cool factor is accurate, because in the second Mae Young Classic, when she was the bona fide heel, and all that thing, all the stuff going on with Tegan Nox in their match happened, and her knees blew out, Rhea Ripley, even just sitting there, still acting the heel when she was doing that, just that smirk she had on her face and kind of how she went about everything. And so does Raquel have that? No. But I think she did well in the packages, on the mic. I thought her celebration afterwards might have gone a little too much on the face side for a celebration. Yep. But it also does show, I guess, in another way, how much passion she had, how much it meant for her to win the title. So I am interested to see where it goes, who she ends up feuding with, if they do split up Kai and Gonzalez and how that's done. But I'd say she's probably going to at least have a month to 3 month reign at worst.
Oh yeah. With NXT, it seems like they got to the point where their title changes, whereas breakneck at speed as the show. But thankfully they've backed off from that some and gone back to the longer reigns. I would expect no fewer than a few months here at the very least. Unless they're fast tracking her up, but I don't think it's wise to fast track her up. I think moving her to this level is going to be challenging for her in the short term enough that I don't think she'll be moving up quickly. I don't know if either or both of you guys saw the sit-down interviews that that Io and Raquel did with Samoa Joe. Samoan Joseph. I'm so sorry. Much more formal for the version of Joseph that we got sitting down doing these interviews. First of all, Samoa Joe just obviously knocks this out of the park, as he does when he's given this or any non-wrestling job. Not enough for the guy just to be an awesome wrestler. He has to be good at that too. What a jerk. But yeah, it put both these women at ease, and they both did really good interviews, really good mission statements, and when it comes time for Raquel to turn face, I feel like I saw enough there that maybe that'll work even better than this. Although being the only woman who's the size that she is, it's going to be tough for her to be a face, because you know they're going to want that monster on the heel side of the ledger. We'll see where they go with that.
Let me make a comparison real quick, Kelly. Yeah. I think Raquel, her mic work right now is probably similar to what we're seeing with Bobby Lashley right now as WWE champion. Like, you can see the good stuff there. There's still a bit of struggle here and at certain spots there, but you can definitely see the potential in their promos if they're given the time and just given the confidence to run with their mic ability.
Sure. And Lashley, of course, has been on that journey for a longer time, but did take some years off. And Lashley will never be a top flight guy on the mic. He's, you know, he in high school and college, he was a meathead, and he didn't have to be. Like, you're not asked to be charismatic at that time, but now he kind of has to do it. But you pair a guy with MVP, and it's gold. So, yeah, a good main event, but hardly the best match on the show. We will talk plenty about that best match in the show, and if you guys disagree with me, we're going to have a problem. So, anyway, let us go to the phones. You can call us at 515-605-9345 and chat with us. Ask us anything. Not anything. It's this is on the free site, so keep it cool. If it's ever a VIP show, ask us anything. Let's talk to our friend Darrell. Darrell, if you can hear me, go ahead and let me know what you thought.
How you guys doing tonight on night one of Stand and Deliver?
Feeling like it did indeed deliver. I was happy with the show, although way tougher to recap than the usual NXT weekly show when you get this many in-ring minutes and this many guys in the ring at once.
And no breaks.
Yeah.
And you can't pause.
You have to wait like 5 minutes, 2 minutes after when they, because I guess it posts automatically and then you can play it, replay it like that. Then it'll allow you to pause, stop, and rewind and all of that because it posts automatically. So
I think you just changed my life, Darrell.
Yeah, I hate Peacock right now, but yeah, that's the only way to do it because I had to figure that out when trying to do the hits and misses for the UK show. So I just wait about 5 minutes after it unposted or stop running live so I can go back and do all of that. But tonight's show was good. Even the global press conference, I wish they do more of those for takeovers and stuff like that, because that was pretty interesting too, how they build up things using that. My first thing tonight, we're going to my best match of the night, and that's Walter versus Tommaso Ciampa. And the way that they set that match up, and I know people were saying it's a typical Walter match, but I like that Walter matches be different each time, where you don't have, like when he faced Ilya, it was a straight, brutal slap fest. Like, he beat that man into another conscience where they building a story off of that. I like how Tommaso Ciampa was the first person out of the 700 days to get this much offense on him. And they could continue the story if they want to. But that match tonight was brutal. I loved it. It was beat down. They can continue on with it. They sold me on all the finishes with Tommaso, even when he kicked out the double power bomb. I was like, oh, they really going to maybe change the title? But the finish, yeah, it was quick and came out of nowhere, but I feel like that's a continuation that they can add on. How did you guys like that match tonight and everything that they did, especially the conversation that Samoa Joe or Joseph had with both of those guys before the match as well?
Oh, if being a typical Walter match is wrong, then I don't want to be right. Walter beats Tommaso Ciampa in 16 minutes and 58 seconds. A just mean, brutal, knockdown, drag-out battle. This was absolutely the best match of the night, and there shall be no argument from anyone. And this was a good night of wrestling, but this was the one. I'd be fine with Walter holding this championship until he dies. People are talking about like who is the person who should beat Walter, and I'm just like, you know, I'm starting to think maybe nobody. I'm fine with that. You can tell there's a lot of either casuals or folks who are not hip to the product in the audience, because Walter got a few "you suck" chants, and I don't typically condone violence against fans, but if Walter had gone out and thrown a few palm strikes over the barricade, that would have been cool. So Walter defends the championship against Tommaso Ciampa in a very straightforward match. Like, there was a lot of intrigue insofar as Timothy Thatcher and his role and where he was going to land. Is he going to be on the side of Walter or the side of Tommaso Ciampa? And that question wasn't even raised. Walter just wins the match, goes and hits the ramp with his Imperium brothers and stands where he always stands and puts his arms up, but does one last sell job of the right hand. He sold it like a champ tonight. There was some real good selling and a couple of matches where the psychology of the hand was very important. I just can't get enough of ring psychology, and that is what turns a good event into a great one, and that is what turns a good match into a great one. So really good stuff with Ciampa getting that advantage and pounding at it. And Walter is so unbeatable. I loved that his on-screen intangible was unbeatable. He is so unbeatable that when a babyface targets an injured part and stomps it, you get it, because there's no other way. There's no other way to take him down. Speaking of protected, nobody ever has been as protected ever. I mean, Andre the Giant undefeated for 30 years, whatever. Nobody's been as protected as Walter. So yes, Walter over Ciampa in the mid-show main event, allowing a triple threat tag match to be a come down match of all things. Walter over Ciampa. Bruce.
I'm glad you brought up the hand, Kelly, because that's one thing I noted is that he sold that hand. I mean, if you are an up and coming, or even if just a wrestler in general, and you want to see a masterclass in selling a body part, you need to watch this match with Walter. The one moment to me that it really stood out is when he does his kind of like, when he kind of does the bridging thing where he jumps on top of their hips with his legs and puts his whole body and his hands down on their hand to pin them down to the ground. When he did that to Ciampa, he had to use like the heel of his hand to put pressure down on Ciampa's hand because his fingers and his hands were so injured that he couldn't actually apply the real pressure he wanted. And so, and he kept grimacing and going back to the hand and having to use his left hand to do some chops and some slaps and some haymakers and strikes. So I thought he was really, really good there. One thing I agree, this match was definitely the match of the night. There was one other match that would have been in contention had they given it 5 to 10 minutes more, but they did not do that, and we'll get to that later. But in this match, what I wanted to know at least, is there have been few wrestlers throughout the years where you feel the anticipation from the crowd, from you watching it, where you're just waiting for that one move to happen, that one certain maneuver, strike, whatever. I don't know if there's anyone right now where you're anticipating that move more than just one chop from Walter. And every time it happens, it's just the fact that the match ended with a chop, to me, is fine, partly because they've been building that chop up so much. It was the first thing in the video package when they before the match aired that they showed was that chop to Ciampa's chest. And this match, more than any other match I can remember recently, had me jump so many times. I think Walter's running boot that he gave to Ciampa was probably the stiffest and like nastiest running boot I've seen in my life. I literally jumped out of my chair just like I scared my dog doing that. So this was one of those matches where if you just want to see violence, you got it. If you want to see some technical wrestling, you got it. If you want to see some brawling, you got it. This match, if you want to see psychology, as Kelly was saying, it's all there. I commend both gentlemen because they really put everything out there. They did not hold back. And I want to push back on one thing that Darrell said, and it was not that Darrell said, but people are saying that it's a typical Walter match. I'm sorry, but a typical Walter match, he usually runs through people with minimal offense being sustained by him. So this is one of the more pay-per-view kind of UK championship quality matches that Walter would generally have. And like Kelly said, if that's wrong, then I don't want to be right.
Nathan Lindberg.
Yes, I think you guys covered that really well. So just a couple things I'll add. Like, this was really like it had everything for just about anybody. And if you're an old school wrestling fan, you want to watch something like Harley Race, or you want to watch something like that, you'll enjoy this match. You're a High Flyer fan, you'll enjoy this match. There's just so much that went into this. It was like easily match of the night for me. So much so that I didn't really take notes because I was just so fixed to the screen. Basically I kind of just leave it at that and we'll kind of move on because, there really isn't a whole heck of a lot that I feel like I can add on top of what you guys already said. But, this was probably one of my more favorite matches in recent memory. Just the hard hitting, the brutality, the fact that Ciampa comes out, he's got his head shaved. He's kind of showing these signs of 2018, 2017 Ciampa. And you know, he's my guy. He's my guy. I love this guy. The journey that we've seen him on for the past, you know, 3 or 4 years, through the injuries and everything. So I wanted to see him topple Walter so bad. And like, I said this on Wrestling Night America, like I knew there wasn't a chance in hell that he was going to win. But there were so many points throughout this match where I'm like, he might do it. He might actually do it. He might topple Walter. And even at the very end when he didn't and he's getting pinned, you know, the hand came down for the third time, it was okay because it was like he gave it his all. He didn't give up until he had nothing left to give. So, I'm totally fine with this. I'd love to maybe see, you know, a little bit more between these two, but if this is a one and done, I can die happy.
On a side note, please, just once. Can we have a takeover match between Walter and Daniel Bryan? Just once, please. Just once.
Ooh.
Just once.
That'd be crazy. And we're worried about Ciampa's neck.
I don't even know how we could get there, but I'd be interested to see them try.
I don't care how they get there. I just want to see the match.
Yeah.
Darrell, go ahead.
Yes, that match right there, the reason why I love matches like that is because nobody, even though you're going to have a winner and a loser, don't nobody lose in that match. Ciampa comes out looking good, even though taking the defeat, and Walter comes out and showing himself as a star, which he already is to certain people, but to the people who don't get to see him or don't watch him weekly, now they get to see what he's been doing in all of his big title matches. That's why it's a typical Walter match, because in his title matches, he just gives you so much, even though sometimes this the most he has ever sold since being the champion. This the most he has ever sold, but he give you so much, and he build up the next person that he fights every time as well. But I loved it. Hopefully they can continue on this because it's no one in the pipeline who's looking to beat Walter M. Bison right now. So they need to continue on with this one. Now my next one will be about the opening match, and to me the opening match was the beginning match with Zoe Starks, even though it's a pre-show match, with Zoe Starks and Toni Storm. I'm loving each week, every time Zoe Starks come out, she's starting to develop more and more. You're starting to see more personality put in what she wears, how she come out. You can see the confidence in her face. And I'm liking the build that they're giving her. I like that they gave her this win after she's been taking on Big Star after Big Star in the NXT world. And then she finally gets one win, which you can see probably be her first feud in NXT probably, But I'm liking what they're doing this. I'm liking the build that they have with her, even though they got some people coming up who's going to be coming up along with her, who probably have a higher cachet because of their name. But I want to see how all of that rise, because you got the future people who coming up, especially with the new title change that they have. I know you said you didn't get to see much of it, but what are your thoughts on that match and everything I just said?
So I was very excited about this match when I heard that it was when it was booked. Not because Tony's in it, because her matches have been whatever, but because Zoe's just been so good. And I was very interested in it from a booking standpoint to see who would win and what that meant. And with Zoe winning, I'm not entirely sure what it means. Like, I know they like Zoe, and I know that Tony is kind of on a falling action right now after what seemed like they put a lot of effort into her return. But yeah, she takes the pre-show loss, wasn't on the 12-match takeover card, which is well over the usual 7 that we get. But yeah, Zoe wins this. I don't even have a time for you here, because I didn't get to see when I finally got Peacock up and running. All I got was the last 2 minutes here. But weekly listeners will know that I'm a massive fan of Zoe Stark and what she's doing to this point. When they had her enter earlier, they showed their little earlier today, and it was Io Shirai arriving with Zoe Stark. I was temporarily convinced that Zoe Stark was going to figure into this match, and maybe she'd help cost Io the championship, and that little brief face turn she had was going to be just a memory. But I was overthinking that one, and they're on the journey with Zoe that they are. So very interested to see what direction they're going with Zoe. Nate, whether you saw the match or not, do you have any comments on the decision and where Zoe's headed?
Yeah, sure. So I did not get to see the match. I only caught the very tail end of the pre-show where Samoan Joseph was talking with the Io Shirai. So it was the very tail end of that I caught. But as far as Zoe Stark goes, I mean, and same thing again, regular viewers know, I think all three of us, you know, you, me and Tom are really high on her. I feel like she has that it factor. There's still some tweaking and some honing and some refining there that needs to be done. But, I can see what they see in her. When she did show up earlier, you know, with Io Shirai, I kind of had a similar thought, you know, maybe not necessarily that she was going to get involved in the match. I don't know if I had really a concrete thought or idea of what might happen, but I kind of had a feeling maybe that, you know, we might see her involved at some point throughout the course of the night with the women's title angle. But now, you know, just kind of to get her on the actual main show was really all that was. But yeah, you know, a win over Toni Storm, I feel like she's finally got that win. You know, she's had, I think it was what she's had two, I think it was two wins over jobbers. And then every other match she's been in, she's been on the losing end, but just barely. And it's always been against a bigger star, you know, like a top level star. So it's you know, fine by me. I'm glad to see this. I'm also glad to see it was Toni Storm that finally took that loss, because I think, you know, I mean, she's not one of my favorites personally. I do, but I'm kind of glad to see it was her and not somebody else that took it. But I still think even if it is her first feud, I think Toni will be able to give her some good matches. You know, she's not necessarily the greatest in-ring technician that NXT has, but I think she'll be able to get her through some good matches for her first like big major feud, if that is the direction they go, which seems like it's probably the most obvious direction here. So, yeah, you know, thumbs up for that. Like I said, didn't see the match, but thumbs up for Zoe Stark.
Bruce.
So I caught the last, I'd say, 3 to 5 minutes of the match. And from what I saw, it wasn't the cleanest or the smoothest, I should say. Toni Storm looked a little unenthused, maybe, from what I saw. And I didn't get to see it from the beginning, so maybe it's just the stuff that I didn't see. But also, I mean, people who listen to the show also know that I'm, at best, apathetic towards Toni Storm. I think her character is very meh, and always has been. She's fine in ring, but it's nothing that I go out of my way to see. So I'm generally just not interested in Toni Storm. So I was kind of half watching the match that when I did have it on, because I kind of forgot there was a pre-show. But I was surprised that they actually had Stark go over, although that's what I wanted to see happen, because even though she hasn't been winning, they've been going on that slow build with her, where they're leaving that sense in fans that there's something more to her. There's something special about her that the fans can cling on to. My issue, though, is how they booked the finish of the match doesn't do anybody – it helped Zoe Stark, yes, because she got the win. But because it's not very definitive and it was on a roll-up off of a counter to the Storm Zero, it kind of comes off as, oh, it was a lucky break or a fluke win kind of thing. And so that may be the impetus for them to, as you and Nate were saying, have the first feud be against Toni Storm, and Storm could be like, oh, you know, it was a fluke, it was a roll-up, you can't really beat me, blah, blah, blah. And Zoe Stark could say, a win is a win is a win is a win, and they go from there. But I'm much more excited about the future of Zoe Stark than I am about anything to do with Toni Storm. I'm sure she's a great person. I just, when it comes to her as a wrestling character, I'm just not interested, right? And you brought up Gigi Dolin, the former Priscilla Kelly, and Cora Jade. I forgot what her other name was. They kind of came in together, those three. And I'm actually surprised that, because of what Darrell said about the name cachet, I was for sure thinking that Priscilla Kelly, Gigi Dolin would be one of the, out of the three, the first one to get some more of a push. But I'm glad to see Zoe Stark, and interested to see where they go from here, not just with her, but where does this leave Toni Storm now in NXT? So that's kind of been interesting to see how they play out, or if they decide to move her to a Raw or a SmackDown.
Yeah, those women coming up, Saray, Frankie Monet, where's the seat at the table? It's a bad, bad time to be sliding down the card, because there's going to be way more women above you by the time you look up next.
Well, and at this point, those people coming on are going to need to get victories, and the people like Toni Storm, who are nowhere to go but be that kind of gatekeeper, it's not going to be good for her, right? So it's just going to be really interesting to see how they shift Toni Storm moving forward.
Yep. Yeah, it's going to be weird time. Like you say, people are wishing Io well, and she's going up, and I'm just like, how did that not just immediately occur to me, considering how many more women are going to need TV time in the very short term here? Darrell, go ahead.
Mm-hmm. And I'm kind of hating it for Io. She go up with Mick Khan coming out today, in a couple of interviews talking about how Becky Lynch and Ronda Rousey are coming back before sooner than most people think. So, like, they're coming back this year early. So this would be a bad time for her to come up when you got those two coming back and the two younger people who they pushing. That could put her in a bad spot, knowing especially how Vince like to do the people who from Japan and stuff like that, how he like to play with them. So, yeah, it's tough. But my next thing will be about the triple threat match. Even though my guys didn't win, but I like the triple threat match. I like everything they did. It seemed like they were trying to give Legato more so to sell them as being legitimately, since everybody forgot that they was in the match. A lot of people forgot that it was a three-way in the first place. So I like what they gave them. I like MSK. They cool, but don't have to be corny. The show that they're cool and stuff like that. And Grizzled Young Veterans are just the solid team in the three that held everything together. And I love the tease right before the finish where they gave you just a little taste of what these guys can really do. And hopefully we can get a feud between these guys over that title. And eventually my guys will get it. To help continue on with MSK push. But I love that they gave them the titles and they gave them this big push right off the rip. And they standing up to it and proving why. And I like how these three teams put together and made it look like the tag team division is back when you got three solid teams at the top. How did you guys like the coming down match? But it really wasn't a come down for me. But how did you guys like it? And what you guys think?
I liked it. It was, you know, I say come down, but it's just it's a very, very different style of match. So right. It wasn't going to suffer the death spot because it wasn't just a lesser version of the same kind of match. It was just a good, very, very different match. The audience did this no favors, and WWE didn't help themselves by insisting on trying to drown them out with piped in noise and piping in MSK chants that clearly weren't taking, because this was a pretty vociferously anti-MSK audience. I thought this was a booking mistake. I absolutely, yeah. I think that they needed a hero's journey. And it is not easy to just push someone all the way to the top right now and not have fans turn against it. They just do, and we learn that all the time. If somebody's new to a division, take Roman Reigns, like the biggest possible example, where he won the Royal Rumble at a time when he had only had one singles match on pay-per-view, one ever, and he won the Royal Rumble. That's not something people wanted to see happen that way. And MSK, it seems like they've kind of tried to do something with them, but so much of the reason we're supposed to want to see him win is because Nash Carter has been through some stuff, and not that doesn't work, but we don't know really a lot about who these guys are. Like they like to be irritating. They like to be loud. And I think most of it's in a fun way. And I like what they bring to the table in the ring. But I think it would and should have taken more time than this. Ideally, I would have loved to have seen the tag tournament end 4 months ago. And then this match happens now. But that is not something they can do anymore because they're always working towards the next takeover way, way too quickly. So that didn't do these guys any favors either. But this crowd loved Legato. They seemed like GYV was their whatever team, kind of got a mixed reaction, and MSK they were not about. So, and that's, I get it. Legato is really, really cool. They are really cool when they stand together. Nobody's better dressed on the roster. Maybe MVP. But these guys are just a cool, cool trio. And I get that they're going to be cheered. GYV is a more standard heel, like a perfect heel act.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought very, very much that GYV should have won this match. And then we got something for MSK to overcome. And they have to take a while to overcome and to fight their way back to a 2-on-2 match. And then they have their big moment. I get that they were supposed to beat the outgoing heel champions in this, what would have been probably a 4-way match or maybe a 3-way without Legato, because they never treat Legato as much as the fans actually like to see these guys. But I really thought they needed something to overcome. And once we get out of WrestleMania week, it'll be interesting to see how fans respond, Bruce.
So, okay, I have a lot of things to say going off of your comments, because I agree this was a bad booking decision. I think that GYV should have won. Listeners to the show will know, and Kelly and I agree, that the best triple threat tag team match we've seen was in NXT UK between GYV, Gallus, and Andrews and Webster. That was hands down the best triple threat tag team match. And part of the reason why this match was a come down for me is because I went into it expecting that this match would give that match a run for its money. However, because they insisted on having tag outs, that was impossible to do in this match. The whole point of having a triple threat match is so there are no disqualifications, right? Why do you have to tag out then? I just don't understand that. So that's for me is kind of why there was a come down. Also, just after everything that was Walter Ciampa, the match, it didn't start out as quick or as furiously paced. Okay, the beginning had that, and then it kind of calmed down thanks to GYV doing their heel work. But like Kelly said, the fans were just kind of – there was some cognitive dissonance, I felt like, going on with the fans in attendance because, like you said, they were seemed to be cheering the wrong people and booing the wrong people in this match specifically. Excuse me. Now, I have long been a proponent of the Grizzled Young Veterans. I think all of us have, including Darrell. He covers the show for The Torch. He covered UK for The Torch and while they were there too. And Zach Gibson is – just a fiend on the mic. He is absolutely fantastic. I loved his little heel act earlier in the match. He's like, hey, guys, no, don't come after me. He's all trying to plead, play it nice and everything and just getting hammered. He has the best facial expressions. I still think James Drake is the most underrated wrestler in WWE, no matter what brand it is. That man can do almost anything in the ring, and he does it well. Yes, he pantomimes too much on the mic and everything, but in the ring, James Drake is fantastic. When it comes to the whole issue with Nash Carter and his struggles, I think the issue there for me is that while, yes, those things matter, in pro wrestling, a lot of the things need to be based on having or it needs to be based within wrestling. And it didn't seem like enough of it was based around them as a team and wrestling, if that makes any sense specifically. And so for me, it's great. I still think for them, like you're saying, the path should have been as a babyface team making that long road to get to the tag team champions, because a triple threat generally, to me, always would favor a heel champion because or a heel competitor because they don't have to actually go for the champion to win the title. And so I just felt like there was another match that I felt like the decision to have the winner should have been different, but I just felt here coming off the Ciampa Walter match and then having that ending, while it was nice to see MSK have that whole feeling of a come down match for me was just encapsulated by the fact that GYV once again put over another team at the expense of themselves, right? So they lost two tag team classics in a row, which I thought they should have won. And now they're over here. They still can't get the NXT titles on them. So I hope GYV ends up with the titles. But it seems like on stateside NXT, they're more there to be the fall guys for the title.
It does indeed. And that was my same thought tonight. When they didn't win it, I was like, oh, they might not. They just might not ever.
Never.
Yeah, Nate, on the triple threat.
Well, I'm not going to be that pessimistic, but there is a chance you guys are right. But I'm going to hold out hope that maybe they will win the title someday. More or less, everything that you guys kind of touched on is things that I've been thinking about or I was going to say myself. I really felt like this was Grizzly Young Vets match to win, for all of the reasons that you guys outlined. I kind of talked a little bit about, potentially seeing MSK win on Saturday on Wrestling Night America. And it's, it was something that was a little bit intriguing to me simply because they're the newer team, maybe put the titles on them to give them a bit of shine. But, it really wasn't the most intriguing outcome for me. Seeing the Grizzly Young Vets win the titles, that would have been really what I wanted to see, especially, again, what you guys said, the two Dusty Classics, the fact that they had to be off, NXT TV for the majority of this year because of the pandemic, all of that. I really wanted to see them win these titles. And MSK, it's not I don't think it's necessarily the worst booking decision in the world. I wouldn't have done it, but I don't think it's the worst booking decision in the world. I just don't think it's a great one. There isn't a major story behind for them. We don't know, like you guys said, we don't know a whole heck of a lot about them. It's just like my entire reaction to their win was, oh, okay. Like, all right. And that's not how I want to, that's not the reaction that I know that I want. I'm sure that's not the reaction that, you know, NXT and MSK want. They, you know, they want people to be excited about it, but clearly, you know, I mean, my own personal reaction, the reaction of the actual live fans in attendance tonight, I feel like that should really be an indicator that this might have been a bad move. You know, I don't want to see hotshotting with the titles, but like it would, I'm almost a proponent of them losing them quickly to somebody like Grizzled Young Vets and then having to climb a mountain to get back to them just so we get that build or something. You know, I might need to think a little bit more about that, but like at least at the moment it sounds good. But yeah, so yeah, I'll stop flapping my gums about it. But, you know, the match itself was okay. Oh yeah. One other thing I wanted to say, you know, I just kind of wanted to touch quickly on the, you know, Bruce, what you were talking about with the no disqualifications thing. Cause like anytime you say 6-man tag, right. And I'm not talking 3-on-3, 2 versus 2 versus 2. It is not going to get me excited. And that is generally the reason why it's like, I can understand if you want to do tags, if you want to have people tagging in and out, have it be a triple threat match, have three people be in the ring and have them be able to tag in and out, have tag their own partner. But this whole format of 4 people are out, 2 people are in, you can tag whoever you want is just bizarre. I can understand doing it every once in a while, maybe to like, you know, make things interesting. So it's like, oh, you might have to tag a different partner and make, you know, a kind of for story. But for something like this, where the story doesn't fit that, either like, you know, this is a no DQ match. If you're gonna build it as a no DQ match, why the hell are you tagging in? Don't pay attention to the rules. Grab a steel chair and bash somebody. Well, don't bash somebody's head in because, you know, CTE and we know about that stuff now. But figuratively, bash somebody's head in and then win the belt. Like,
Thank you.
Just, yeah. I mean, I don't even care if you're supposed to be a face. Like, that's just logic, right? Mm-hmm. So, It really does take me out of it. Whether it's NXT, WWE, AEW, an indie show, I don't care. I hate that match stipulation.
Me too. Okay. So yes, Darrell, if you've got one more, go ahead.
Yes, I do. And they started with all three of them in the ring, and they did the same thing in the triple threat match that was everybody talk about that was over there in the UK. I think what they was missing, the only thing that's missing, and each one of their triple threat match, because they done had 3 so far in NXT, the faces done won, the tweeners done always won. The difference in between that match that everybody probably forget is that South Wales, that's what they were home. And the crowd built more into that match because they were behind the faces that they put there. And they every time they did something big, and those two guys were so great at selling, and they got beat on that entire match by both teams. They got beat on, and they built the comeback for that. And plus they was at home, and they was the hometown favorites. That what made the match even more, because how the fans were so into that match and so behind those two. But they had to all tag in. They started with 3 guys in the ring, and they tagged in. I think the mistake was they shouldn't have never said no disqualification. They just should have kept it.
Yeah.
But that was the one slip-up. And they said it at the end of the match when he put his hands up in the turnbuckle. They said no disqualification, which I don't think – I don't never seen anybody get disqualified for putting a hand in a turnbuckle or wrapping an arm around the side and all of that. So I never seen nobody get disqualified. So I think that was a mistake that was made. But the last thing I would like to talk about is Pete Dunne versus Kushida. I like that match. I wish they would have had a few more minutes, but I understand. But that match was so good. I hate that Kushida had to lose. But I understand and I see what they're probably continuing to build of Pete Dunne and saving him for something else. They probably have Pat coming back or something like that. But that match was good. I just wish it would have had a few more minutes. How did you guys like it, and what do you guys think?
Yeah, I mean, I don't know how much more I can say about it than that. That is definitely the story of that match. It was only 10:38, a matchup that you would assume would go 17 to 20 minutes on a normal 2.5 hour five match takeover. This would have gotten a lot more time, but you don't have that. When this is essentially just a throw-in match, like, there's no issue here. They both just want to be a better technical wrestler than the other. It's not a feud match. And it honestly, for me, put it in a position where I wanted Kushida to win because I like him a tiny, tiny bit more. I adore both guys, but I wanted Kushida to win because I like him a little bit more, but it didn't really feel like it mattered. Because no stakes were on, like, the idea of who's a better technical wrestler is kind of this fluffy, weird thing that doesn't quite work in kayfabe. Because yeah. if you're the best wrestler, you should be the guy who wins the most wrestling matches. So it's not something that really were in that, going back to the feud with Benoit Angle or Benoit Jericho, where they had that best technical wrestler. It's like, How do you say that when you lose literally half your matches? It's just whatever. So flawed from that standpoint. But this was your obvious opener, unless they felt like they would open with the tag matches, as often they like to do. But yeah, Dunn goes over. Not sure for what yet. Maybe he's built up for if Finn Balor successfully defends, and maybe indeed for somebody like Pat, and you can get Pete Dunne, a wildly popular person, back on the face side of things. I don't know. I'm surprised I talked about it this much because there's really nothing going on here other than two good wrestlers have good match. Nate?
I don't think I could sum it up quite better than that. Two good wrestlers have good match. Yeah, I mean, you know, and you know, I wrote about it in the hits and misses tonight. Like, it's, you know, there really wasn't a whole heck of a lot of build for this. This match was kind of thrown on the card last minute. But for a match that was thrown on the card last minute, it surely entertained me. You know, it was exactly what I expected it was going to be. They put on a great match. I think it was a little bit short. I agree. I wasn't keeping time. I didn't realize it was quite that short. I think you said it was like 10:38 or something like that.
You're right. Yeah.
Yeah. So, you know, and I think if we were to see this on, you know, just a normal Wednesday night that wasn't Branded Takeover, you know, that could have easily been like a 20-minute match or something like that, you know, mid-show or something along those lines. But maybe not quite 20 minutes, but at least, you know, another five or six. I don't know what the whole point of Pete Dunne winning here is, you know, if it's to, like you said, kind of maybe shine him up for something like that. I could see it. I feel bad for Kushida. I want to see him do so much more than what he's doing. He's such a talent. Amazing in the ring. Like, I can understand, you know, I get it that they don't like, if you can't speak English well, they don't like to give you a spot. I hate that. I don't know, but whatever. That's another tangent I could get on. But I don't really know what this means for Kushida here. It's like every time they go to push him a little bit, they, you know, we see him in some sort of a spot, he loses. And he's never on the winning end of really any major feud here. So it's like I feel like he's kind of just destined to be in this, like, upper mid-card spot where – you know, on commentary, they're going to cheer him and they're going to try and, you know, talk him up and everything like that. But all of us fans kind of are going to know, like, well, whoever he's facing, probably going to end up coming out on top. I don't know. I'm hoping they do something with him. I really do. Because it's as much as I like Pete Dunne, I was really rooting for Kushida here. I feel like he could have really used this win.
Bruce.
So a couple things. First, the last time I was on the show, it was with Nate, and we did Takeover Vengeance Day, Wrestling Night in America. That was only 7 weeks ago. not even 2 months. And so to your earlier point, Kelly, about having to book between just booking for the next takeover, they used to be quarterly. Now they're every 2 months, basically. And that is not a good way to book yourself into a corner, right? But on that show, it was Gargano versus Kushida for the North American title. And if I remember correctly, Nate and I were both just like, if you didn't put the title on Kushida now, then what the hell do you even have him on the roster for? What is he there for except to basically put over people, which is not what he should be doing, right? Kelly's a big New Japan fan here. Kushida's one of the best of the last decade to out of Japan, right? If it comes down to who's the best technical wrestler, to me, this is not disrespect, but I don't think it's even close. I think it's Kushida. And again, I don't think it's close. This was the match, the other match besides the triple threat where I thought the Rock booking decision was made. And that's because kind of going back to Tony Storm, like, what the hell is Kushida going to do now? Is he just going to be a fall guy? And we've been trying to avoid that conclusion for a long time with Kushida because all of us know that there's more to him than that. I mean, I think back to his match with Walter on NXT still and how great that match was, partly because of the size difference, but the psychology and the ability that they both showed him that match. And I just felt like, to me, Pete Dunne almost has a bit of Teflon to him in NXT because his character is pretty cool. He's had all these different title matches, different title reigns. His character is one that really doesn't give any F's and takes no BS, and so people kind of gravitate toward that. So I think he would have been fine taking a loss here. My issue with Pete Dunne, though, is if you're going to do those damn finger snap spots, okay, and, you know, in terms of kayfabe and psychologically, it seems to work great for the fans. He's the one person, though, when he does it, where he takes an extra bit of time to finish it to the point where I'm just saying, why don't you just punch or kick him in the face with your free appendages, right, so that he breaks the hold? Or just poke him in the eyes with your other fingers in your other hand.
Or as Beth said, phalanges.
The phalanges, right. Just, like, there are – with Pete Dunne, sometimes for me, I have to do too much I have to do too many gymnastics and have some cognitive dissonance in his matches to believe what's going on. And I don't have to do that as much with someone like a Kushida. And, again, I just think Kushida is the better wrestler, and I would have liked to see him – have gone over here, especially since he didn't go over at Vengeance Day for the title. And now it's just, again, he is arguably the best technical wrestler in the company, especially on NXT, and he is getting nothing. And as fans, you know, I'm someone where like a Timothy Thatcher, a Kushida, a Shayna Baszler, that's my wrestling sweet spot. To see that happen to the people I like when they have so much talent, and they should be doing more. It's disheartening to a certain extent.
There was a feud, a couple of bottom feeders, but still they got a feud in NWA before NWA went dark at the beginning of the pandemic. And there was a spot where the heel was holding down the face. He was stepping on his hand on the steps outside the ring. And with his free arm, with his free legs, he's just basically dancing around. And with his free arm, the face is like waving it, going, no, no, don't do more stuff to my hand. I'm like, that arm has other uses.
Tripping.
You could use that arm to push the guy
right.
who is balancing on your hand to the floor. So, yes. Nothing Pete does is as bad as that, and I get that he does it because it's theatrical. But you just got to toe the line. What are you going to do? So, yes, thank you as always, Darrell, for the call. We got another call that came in while Darrell was like on number three or just thereafter. This is from 240. You know, I should have this written down. I should have a little list. Because I know that I know who this is, and I'm going to feel real silly when he tells me that I've forgotten. 240, remind me.
It's Steve from Bowie, Maryland.
Ah, yes, Steve. How are you doing?
Yeah,
I had it between two, but I was sure I was going to guess wrong.
Well, The Maryland contingent is getting pretty strong on the phone-ins with the between me and Ryan and the Reverend.
Kyle.
Right.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Right.
And
okay. Well.
But anyhow, first thing I wanted to bring up was one thing that Bruce was mentioning about the length of time between takeovers. The one thing that I think helped this one is that ever since Vengeance Day, the last one, we didn't have any of those Wednesday shows that kind of got in the way. And I think that's what happened a little bit on the main roster when they pushed WrestleMania back 2 weeks and shoved Fastlane in there at the last minute. You know, I like the fact that these matches got more of a build, and they're proving that they have a deep enough roster where they can pull off a 12, was it 12 matches, 13 matches? How many are on the two nights here?
I think it's 12. I think it's 6 and 6.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
But they definitely have enough of a roster and have enough of a build that they can do this, maybe not all the time. Once a year is probably just about right for NXT.
Yeah. Those branded, I'm hoping that we see, if not an end to the branded stunt weeks, at least we pull back a little bit. If they want to do Halloween Havoc, I don't think that I'd have any issue with that. Like if they want to do that kind of as going forward, maybe a kind of a tradition for them now, then that would be fun. But yes, with there's already too many takeovers to feel like we're getting proper build. But you're right. I thought that this one did a little bit better because they had a few more weeks to do it. Now, some of the matches only got put together last week, but I didn't have issue with them taking a lot more time on the – and this is very Attitude Era in its booking, in that pretty much the night after the pay-per-view, you knew what the main event of the next pay-per-view was going to be. And for a week or sometimes even two, that's still all you knew. And then the rest of it coalesced. So even if you saw some of the hints of the other stuff, they didn't bother with that until they'd gotten a couple of weeks of hard sell out of the way with the top matches. And I thought that the build here was very strong, stronger than some of the takeover build has been. I mean, match by match, it certainly varies. And some of the matches, the build doesn't match where it actually was on the card. But I thought they did a pretty decent job of doing this. And again, going to Tuesday where they're not up against anybody, hopefully we don't need to see so many stunt weeks and we get proper storytelling. But we'll see if they can keep from doing it, because this stuff, it does draw. So maybe it's tempting. Nate?
First, Steve, hey, thanks for catching my typo in the hits and misses. I had North American title written down instead of UK title for Ciampa Walter, apparently. I just fixed that. I don't really have a whole lot to add there either. It's kind of like there's – like the build from Fastlane to WrestleMania completely agrees. Like there's not a whole lot. The WrestleMania card this year I'm like not super, super jazzed about. Whereas like TakeOver this, you know, and I said this on Saturday, I'm really pumped for this, this card, you know, both this night as well as night two. There's only a few matches for Mania that I'm really even kind of like half as excited about as I am really any of the matches here on TakeOver. So, I agree. I feel like throwing something like Fastlane in there definitely screwed something up on the, you know, screwed the booking up on the main roster. And I'm kind of glad that they didn't do that here. You know, by throwing in some random, you know, obviously not Halloween Havoc, you know, some random named show. That was what I was looking for, a named show, to kind of like, you know, build to and screw the booking up. So we've been talking for a while now about long-term booking. And I think like, you know, with maybe the exception of like Pete Dunne and Kushida and Storm and Stark, and for the most part, the majority of these angles were built pretty well. I think you're onto something.
So the matches I want to see on Mania, have nothing to do with their builds because it's been so bad. It's just because I want to see the matches between these wrestlers, whether it's Bianca Belair versus Sasha Banks or Cesaro versus a Seth Rollins. But the builds have been crap, right? Now, this takeover, yeah, the builds up and down haven't been as great as you'd want them, but overall, it's been much more consistent than what we have for WrestleMania this weekend. And that did help because, as you said, Kelly, we knew that it was going to be Io Shirai versus Raquel Gonzalez. And we knew that was going to happen. We had an inkling that it was going to be Finn Balor versus Karrion Kross and Kyle O'Reilly versus Adam Cole, and that's what happened. But then getting those main matches out the way, it basically allowed them to, like a reverse pyramid structure in terms of how they booked the show, because they're able to go from top down or from the end to the beginning. And I think by doing that, because they had such a defined route on where they wanted to go with those three matches, they were then able to focus on building up the rest of the card. Again, to mixed reviews here and there, have to keep in mind that Danny Burch's injury really threw a curveball into their plans for the tag team championship picture. So maybe give them a little pass there. So I shouldn't have been too hard on the tag team match earlier, but it just seems like, whenever we get to January through April, the last probably 5 years, since 2016 or so, WWE doesn't know anything but basically car wreck booking. Like, it's just fast paced over and over and keeps going that there's no room to breathe. And I'm actually kind of looking forward to the end of this weekend, so that we can get back to having some room to breathe. I know from listening to the three of you, and Tom's on as well, the last, I'd say at least 2 or 3 months, the pace of the show has been one that all three of you have, because it hasn't left you any time to take in the segments, to process, to just breathe. And so hopefully once we get past this cycle we're in of takeovers every 2 months right now, of WrestleMania, of having these pay-per-views every 3 weeks out, that we can go back to some more calmer looking, if that makes sense. Because it's just, there's just been a lot going on to try and keep track of everything is just so much. And then I did have a question for you, Kelly. Have you heard anything on if Peacock is going to keep, or I guess USA, Peacock, whoever's going to be, if takeovers will remain a weekend staple, or if they're going to be now a Wednesday or Wednesday, Thursday kind of thing looking forward?
I have no reason to believe that this will be a change. This is probably just WrestleMania related, but I don't think Peacock would turn that down. At the same time, I don't think USA wants to give away a lot of viewers to Peacock that often. So I would be surprised if that happened. But if there ends up being a post-takeover media call with Triple H tomorrow, I could ask him that.
He actually had one tonight too. I saw on Twitter.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
I didn't get it. Normally I've gotten the email well before this, but I never saw it.
I saw on Twitter, it looks like there have been questions being asked and answered. So.
Huh. Yeah. That's weird, because I normally get all those emails. I didn't get any email about this one. That is so strange. Okay, so yeah, not sure why that happened, but at least that means I got to be here.
Yeah.
So, let's go back to Steve and see if he had anything else for us.
Okay, got one more thing, and it kind of spins the focus onto tomorrow night. This one thing, it's sometimes I might catch onto one word that somebody says, and it sticks in my head, and that happened a couple weeks ago in a backstage segment between Roddy and Kyle. When Roddy said to Kyle, "I hope you and Adam go to hell," and then Beth Phoenix repeated it the next week. I know it's not happening tomorrow, and I heard you guys talk that this isn't going to be likely the last match in a summer-long feud. Could this end up in Hell in a Cell?
That is a really good question, and it definitely tracks that they like to give those little words. Like they'll foreshadow a feud with a word. That's what they did with Dunn and Kushida. Dunn didn't even ask for an opponent, but I immediately thought of who was on the table, and I knew what the match was going to be. They were setting up, I think it's one of the ambulance matches that got canned because somebody got injured or had to be taken off TV. But they'll do that with, they'll have somebody throw somebody into an ambulance backstage. This is obviously main roster stuff. And you know, they're heading towards an ambulance match. So it could be that they're heading that way. I thought you were going to ask if Roddy was going to be brought into it. And I was like, yeah, I think he might gum up the works. I think it's going to be tough going for Roddy, no matter what the storyline is with him kayfabe quitting, unless that was their way of actually writing him out, which I hope that was not true, too. But could these two be going for Hell in a Cell? Yes, very much so. I would not be – I mean, these guys are going to wrestle a few times. And there are going to be different stipulations, and it's going to keep getting bigger. But the bigger, I think the big question is, does Vince want to keep Hell in a Cell only at the Hell in a Cell event so it doesn't water down the concept more than it potentially already has been? I don't think he'd want to give that away for the same reason that it would be amazing to see an NXT Royal Rumble, but I don't think they want to do that. Bruce?
Go ahead, Nate.
Go ahead, Nate. Yeah, if you've got it, go ahead.
I was going to say, and it's the same thing with War Games. Like, I don't think we'd ever see, like, a main roster War Games. I feel like the Hell in the Cell stipulation, Money in the Bank, you know, those main roster stipulations, I feel like they've kept them separate almost on purpose. You know, I mean, like a ladder match, I can see, you know, them kind of, you know, doing a ladder match or a table match or something like that. But like these signature, like the Royal Rumble or like I said, Money in the Bank, I think they want to keep them separate. So like, I don't think we'll ever see like a main roster fight pit, which, you know, I don't want to see that. I would love to keep that in like NXT. Steve, I love the idea. I love the idea of seeing these guys like finally using Hell in a Cell as what it's designed and intended to do. End a feud. You lock people in this cage and, you know, you just let them go nuts rather than it just, you know, hey, it's October. Let's throw this giant red thing up and go fight. So yeah, I'd love to see that. I don't think they would for the reason that you just said, Kelly, is like it would water down that whole awful concept of the Hell in the Cell pay-per-view. And it also kind of does intertwine those match stipulations that they have so far kept separate between the main roster and NXT. That's at least my two cents.
Maybe it'll be a drag me to hell match, and the first one to become an evil demon and drag Allison Loman to hell will be the winner. anything can happen. And yeah, I'm referencing 15-year-old movies. What are you going to do about it? Bruce.
So to use their terminology, a Hell in a Cell match seems like too much of a thing for the lateral shows. Right, as you all were saying, when I was on with Frank Pediani on his Then and Now podcast, he talked about how about 10, 11 years ago is when WWE really started hammering home with these gimmick pay-per-views and how, as you said, those gimmick pay-per-views, not just because you have them every year, have watered down the concept, but because you book yourselves in the corner to meet the match gimmicks for those pay-per-views. And we've seen that with Hell in a Cell, right? It's been used to end feuds that are on the level of like a Riddle versus Sheamus instead of something like an Orton versus The Fiend or Cole versus an O'Reilly. Now, I agree that I wouldn't want to see a Hell in a Cell match in NXT. One, if they stay within the Capitol Wrestling Center, it's just not big enough to hold the Hell in a Cell. If they travel, I can see it happening. I do remember that there was one or two years in the last couple where they skipped the pay-per-view because they couldn't find – or maybe it was the Elimination Chamber. They couldn't find an arena to actually hold the Elimination Chamber up anymore for a bit. But even when you think about some of the matches in NXT that have a resemblance to the main or the lateral shows, like a ladder match or a steel cage match, NXT tends to do those matches with a bit of a unique twist or unique flavor on them that makes them distinctly NXT versus what you see on the other shows. And so when you talk about War Games, you talk about the fight pit, and you bring up the whole notion about going to hell. After I took the Hell in a Cell out of my head because now that wouldn't work, I kind of thought an Inferno match? No, that would be too gimmicky. That would be too dumb. But stay with me here. Inferno fight pit match. There we go. I'm only being half facetious.
Okay.
It's so stupid it might work.
I'm just glad none of us mentioned Kennel from Hell.
Yes, there's that too.
Oh,
yes.
I tried to forget about that.
I'm too polite to bring it up, guys. I'm not going to do it. There was one more match on this show. It was a Gauntlet Eliminator. We saved the longest match for last. This went 20.
I'm still a little even traumatized about Pepper. I'm not going to lie.
Oh, he was all in love with dying. He was doing it in Texas. Gauntlet Eliminator goes 23 minutes, 14 seconds, six men in this. And the winner was the one I picked before they even got to the Gauntlet Eliminator, before the Battle Royal. I said it was going to be Bronson Reed because I really didn't want it to be Dexter Lumis. Dexter Lumis did come out of this with a feud, however. So there's that. We got, okay, so order of elimination was Leon Ruff by Isaiah Swerve Scott. Swerve was, okay, before all of this, we got the, we were given the Battle Royal, we were given this, and the winner goes on to face Johnny Gargano. So three-match series. And I said what I loved about this is even though I don't think Gargano's losing this championship, they're going to be able to elevate two guys. And I'll be damned if they didn't elevate three, because last week LA Knight wins, this week Bronson Reed wins, but Isaiah Swerve Scott gets an extremely unlikely station-to-station run where he's dominating at the beginning, he's dominating at the end, he can't finish off Bronson Reed, but he's been there for the whole match, and I thought that Swerve was a really, really unlike. I don't think any of us had him in the final two. I thought we all thought that Grimes would do the last job. It just seems like what they were going to do with him, what they are going to do with a guy like him. But Swerve, I thought that this was potentially for a guy that we keep saying should be up there. And, you know, we don't have to make the decision on who moves down. So easy for us, but whatever. It really seems like it could be a step forward for Swerve, and he's able to point back to this and going station to station. Ruff eliminated by Swerve. Lumis, second one gone, although he entered last, had a really quick night, eliminated by LA Knight. Knight immediately eliminated by Reed, and Lumis gets his heat back, does whatever. He was mad about being eliminated, and they're like, a little bit of payback, and I go, yeah, but he's the babyface who literally never does babyface type things. Like, he has nothing to pay him back for. He just lost in a match. But whatever. He gets back he gets back at LA Knight. So Knight, funny enough, just seemingly lost his feud to Reed, and now he moves on to Lumis. And it seems like they want to do something big with LA Knight. So then we get our final three, and that's when the match finally picked up, because early on, what I didn't like about this one was there was a lot of people taking a powder outside the ring for kayfabe reasons that weren't explained. Like, they weren't really cleared out in a way that made it seem like they should be gone for that long. I thought the tag match did well explaining why somebody was temporarily gone, whether they had to be repeatedly knocked from the apron or the impact stuff that happened to Legato near the end. And this match didn't do that. They just hoped we were like, eh, I've forgotten that guy because he's not immediately in front of my face right now. Grimes eliminated by Swerve, so two eliminations for Swerve, and Swerve eliminated by Reed, two eliminations by Reed, leading to his win at 23-14.
on a week where we got 79 minutes and 9 seconds of wrestling, none of which that I got to take a break during because I don't do the recap during the perfunctory heat segments during split screen commercials in most weeks. So it was very taxing. 25 minutes or so more than their average, because they typically are like 52 to 56 minutes. So Gauntlet Eliminator. Oh, I should read that email as well. This is from JB. For two-night events, I'm not a big fan of using a first-night match to set up a match for the following night. The main roster is doing this at Mania with the women's tag titles, and NXT did it tonight with the Gauntlet Eliminator to face Gargano for the NA title tomorrow night. To me, this waters down the entirety of the event, but more particularly the first night. It makes it seem as though the first night is just a prelude for the second night, and the Peacock USA aired event could realistically just be a regular live US era NXT. What are your guys' thoughts? Am I being nitpicky, or is there merit to this? Also, do you think the Mania Week takeover will continue to be a regular two-night extravaganza, or is there just one-year thing due to unforeseen circumstances? As always, love the show, and go VIP! Yeah, I got to say, I love when they do this. I actually really, really like this two-night thing. Not if they were to do it with every single match, and then you don't have anything to promote on the second night, but in a two-night event, I actually want to see something on night one that has something to do on night two. I think that is a way to really, really give stakes to a match that might otherwise not have stakes. And I think that's beautiful. So I actually love that. So yeah, can't co-sign on this, although I do see, I at least see the argument of watering down the first event because it doesn't, because you don't know. But I think you gain way more from having a match with stakes. So
yeah.
As far as it being a two-night extravaganza, I wouldn't be surprised if this is toothpaste that doesn't go back in the tube. Like, this happened for a reason, but the monetary benefit could be as such. Like, if wrestling fans keep turning out for everything they do, no matter how much they throw at us, then it doesn't matter if we like it or not. They're just going to do it because we're going to keep going there no matter what we say. So I think that this all happened because of COVID, but I also wouldn't be surprised if this continues. But maybe they get to a point during some lean times where it's just stupid to have a two-night WrestleMania. I don't think we'll ever see times as lean as WrestleMania 13 or anything like that. But I could see it going back to one night at some point.
They've already announced the next two dates for WrestleMania for the next 2 years, and they're only one night. So I'm assuming that TakeOver is probably going to follow suit. And probably go back to a one night event as well. Obviously I haven't heard anything concrete about that, but at least the announced dates, and I don't have them pulled up or anything, but
last year at this time, they announced this WrestleMania and it was one night.
Yeah.
Like, that was a change.
I mean, it's certainly possible, but I think they changed that because they were trying to get live fans in the arena. I think it was a COVID change, not necessarily something that they had planned out, you know, a year ago.
Yeah. We'll see if Vince, who's known for his moderation, can hold back. So yes. Anyway, did we talk Gauntlet Eliminator? Nate, you mostly talked. Go ahead.
We might have talked to Gauntlet Eliminator. So, when Tom and I were talking about this on Saturday, or Sunday rather, we had kind of talked ourselves out of Bronson Reed because we figured that, like, Gargano, this is probably not the time for Gargano to lose his title. And we didn't want to see Reed actually lose, a high profile match, where he's been booked so strong. So we talked ourselves out of Reed, and we were thinking Loomis was going to be pretty much the way to go, the de facto winner here. Not that either one of us really wanted to see it. I had also kind of speculated LA Knight, because I feel like, and I feel like that he hasn't quite been fully defined one way or another yet. He's still kind of in this tweener role, and some people might disagree, but at least that's still my perception of him. I feel like he could still just one night, one particular angle, he could easily lean face, easily go heel, and you know, really nobody would be none the wiser. So I was kind of toying with that to see LA Knight go up against Gargano, maybe potentially dethrone him, if not just, you know, to kind of get him in a high profile spot with Gargano. So I'd kind of just written Bronson Reed off at this point, but when the other two that I had kind of picked to go, you know, LA Knight and, was out of the match. And then, you know, we've got, it's just like, okay, maybe it is going to be Bronson Reed. Bronson Reed's the only face left here. It doesn't make sense for anybody left. Everybody else that's left is a heel. Doesn't make sense for them to go up against Johnny Gargano unless there's some major angle, major twist here at some point between now and tomorrow night. Doesn't make any sense for a heel to go up against the heel. It's got to be Reed, and that's the way it came out. I'm totally fine with it. I'm totally fine with it. But I think if it is Reed, we probably will see a Reed victory. I hope I don't want to see him lose. He's had this start and stop trajectory for God. I mean, it seems like a year at this point, at least, where you know, he starts to get pushed a little bit and then he gets off TV for a while. They kind of repackaged him for a bit. They started to push him. They cooled him off. This could be a good launching point for him. To finally get a belt around his waist. I feel like it's a good time to do that. This takeover could be kind of a good reset point, which a lot of times Mania Weekend is a reset point for stories and the whole season, if you will. I'm kind of hoping that might be the case. And we kind of start out with Bronson Reed as our upper mid card champion here. And go from there. And I feel like it also makes sense too for Gargano, because you know we've all agreed our Gargano the way is kind of starting to get a little bit stale. Jump the shark, we keep talking about that. So I could kind of see this as a way to get the North American title off of Gargano, and then you know start planting the seeds of like that kind of dissension between him and Candace, which I guess not really plant the seeds, but kind of go back to those seeds that have already been planted for months at this point, and kind of, you know, maybe start going through something like that. You know, Gargano starts losing it because he lost his title and he can't believe he lost it, and he's, you know, going insane, and it kind of starts to, you know, cause some things between the way and go from there. So there's all these different stories and different routes that you could go with Gargano. So I think if where Bronson Reed won this tonight, I think my money is on a new North American champion tomorrow.
Bold. I'm not so sure, but it was always funny. It's always funny to see Gargano come out and talk about himself as the greatest takeover performer in yet another one of those oversteps of kayfabe, where they call the guy the greatest performer, but he loses almost all his takeover matches. And that's fine.
Like, takeover.
We know what it means, but if he's going to be a great takeover performer, let us tell that narrative. Like, we're noticing. We notice. You don't have to tell us. Bruce.
So when Nate was talking about Reed's kind of start and stop push the last year, I could have swore he was talking about Swerve. But on another note, going back to the WrestleMania thing, if they go back to one night, it's probably going to end up, and TakeOver is still a WrestleMania week thing, then they'll probably move TakeOver back to Saturday before Mania. I think that's how they had it before the pandemic, if I remember correctly. It kind of went Hall of Fame, then TakeOver, then Mania, then Raw after Mania, if I remember the order correctly. And so, and then when they moved SmackDown to, and then I think it was like SmackDown Hall of Fame, TakeOver, whatever the order was, there was something like that. But going back to the Gauntlet Eliminator match. All right, so I have a question, because this is one of those things, like with the Triple Threat match, was really bugging me. Isn't a Gauntlet match an Eliminator in essence?
Yes, this is a two-word phrase that does not need to be.
Well,
and then the other thing, well,
most gauntlet matches, when the next person would enter the ring after a pinfall.
Thank you.
Yeah.
That's why I was confused.
Yeah, so this was almost like a mini Royal Rumble.
Right, and almost like a championship, what do they use it called? Championship Scramble almost?
Yeah, something like that.
A gauntlet match should be one-on-one, then when that ends, the person who survives and takes on the next person, that's running the gauntlet, right? And in essence, when you take out that person, you eliminate them from the match. So the entire – how this match was put together in that specific instance, just like with the triple threat match, to me, just did not make sense. It seemed to be a mislabeling of a match type. Beyond that, though, in regards to some of these characters, I think what they've done with LA Knight, and I know once we knew that he was signed, because, you know, Nate and I were on that takeover last in February when he made his debut. The three of you and myself too have been talking about, are they really going to do with the former Eli Drake? Like, what? He's not the best in the ring. He's a great talker, but, you know, there's a ceiling on that. I think what they've done with Knight is the perfect booking for his character, right? He is that arrogant, cocky guy who thinks he's better than he actually is. He gets the one pin. He's like, oh, I'm hot. You know, I'm the best thing. And he turns around, he gets hit with three finishers and he gets eliminated. And then right away gets put into Loomis's not-so-face-like finisher with the not-so-face-like finisher name. And to me, again, because of how his character has been portrayed since he first interrupted the weird dude from Barstool and whoever else was on Vengeance, the Takeover last time, I think it fits with how his character has been portrayed. Now, Swerve, as we've talked about, is someone we think, just like Kushida, should be much higher on the card. And I think tonight, what I noticed more so than before with Swerve is it's kind of like what we've seen on Sheamus on Raw. And I wrote an article last week about I considered Sheamus to be the in-ring MVP for Raw for the first quarter because he was just bringing a little bit extra to everything he was doing in the ring. That's what I saw with Swerve tonight. He was adding a little bit of edge and aggression and just a little bit more flair to what he was doing. And his facial expressions and reactions tonight were just on point. When he realized he eliminated Cameron Grimes and it was just him and Bronson Reed, that grin he had on his face, I thought was perfect. And so beyond, like, the whole concept of the match, the whole concept is being weird to me in terms of having a gauntlet, but yet having people enter every 5 minutes and having it be this weird Royal Rumble championship scramble mashup. I'm not averse to heel-heel matches or face-face matches. I think when you have a story and you have good wrestlers, it's fine. I would have loved to have seen Gargano and Swerve tomorrow night, just because I know that they would put on in a fantastic match. But Reed is also a fantastic wrestler, and we've all been high on Reed since he was first shown to be in the breakout tournament about 2 years ago now. Wow, it's been that long. And I don't know if I'm going to be – the thing with Johnny Gargano is when he doesn't have the title and he's a heel and he goes back to being – the whiny heel going for the title, I want him off my TV. It's just too annoying to me. And the whole thing with the way, I don't know if you heard Beth Phoenix tonight, but she said she's calling Indy Hartwell and Dexter Lumis Index. So there's that for y'all. But it just, with Lumis too. Wasn't Lumis just in a feud with Johnny Gargano too? Didn't he have a clean victory over Gargano not too long ago as well? And so they're just...
He beat him in a non-title match on TV right after Kushida went 25 and didn't beat him.
Right, right. And so it's just like how they use this match to end feuds and then make new feuds was a bit interesting because there really wasn't any definitive endings, I want to say, to those different feuds from before, kind of how you were talking about earlier. So it was a weird match, but I'm also in agreement with you, Kelly, that I like seeing these kind of matches that take place and then have stakes for the next night because it makes me want to watch the first match to see what happens, and then it gives me more incentive to want to watch the next night. So, but I do understand when you think it waters down, because like the women's tag team championship match for the Saturday, that's only been put together because they had nothing, they had no stories built up for any of the tag teams at all, right? And they just threw them together. Whereas with this gauntlet match, they had built it up for a while. So there was at least a story built into it, whereas the women's tag team championship match is just, we're going to put four or five teams that aren't doing anything and put them together. So there's that.
All right. Well, that is all the matches, and that is all the segments, other than we got the dog again going up to the feet of Frankie Monet. This is almost certainly the former Taya Valkyrie. And it said, Frankie Monet, see you next Tuesday. So she will be there on hand for the first Tuesday show of NXT. And yeah, we covered everything. Oh, Nita Strauss played the national anthem, really, really shredded to open this show.
Yeah,
and it wasn't over long. This is the national anthem. If the national anthem must be played, this is how we want to hear it. Poppy will be on hand tomorrow, and historically she has a history of doing some really, really cool stuff when she is on a takeover show. She was the entrance music for Io Shirai once.
Uh-huh.
And now she's one night too late to do it one last time, unless we get a little bit of a send-off tomorrow, but I don't think there's going to be any time for that with our stacked card. So that is our show. I'm Kelly Wells. You can find me all over social media at Spooky Milk or Spooky Milk Games. Nate, who are you?
I am Nate Lindberg. Find me on Twitter, Nate Lindberg. I got the hits and misses for tonight are already up on pwtorch.com, so check them out if you'd like. I'll have another one for tomorrow night, too. I'm going to quickly throw this in here. On Friday, like I said, Tom is going to be covering my SmackDown Alt Report because I am going to be at I'm going to be doing a virtual convention called Tag Summit, TAGGSummit.org. It is a virtual convention, basically any aspect of nerddom or geekdom in a way that you can use it in a therapeutic way is kind of what this convention is all about. And my other project, we've got a pretty big involvement on Friday night. So if you'd like to check it out, hit me up on Twitter, Nate Lindberg. I can tell you a little bit more about it, or TAGGSummit.org, get a little more information.
And Bruce, who are you?
So I'm Bruce Hazelwood. I'm on Twitter at B_Lee253. I do the Raw Alt Perspective report for The Torch on Monday nights alongside Wade. So you can check my report with his on Monday nights if you don't want to watch the show and just follow along. I've also been doing some more news pieces for The Torch. So you might be seeing some of these shorter news pieces with my analysis or my byline on there. And I also write for DailyDDT.com, and I have a weekly column that goes up after on Tuesday mornings looking back at a big moment from Raw. So for example, last week or this past week, a couple of days ago, I should say, I wrote and was published yesterday on how Raw on Monday was kind of a lackluster go home show for your biggest show of the year. And before that I talked about, you know, Sheamus being the MVP. I talked about the Hurt Business breaking up, being bad for business, and et cetera. So that's every Tuesday on DailyDDT.com. It's another great site I would add to The Torch for your viewing purposes. And I've been doing a lot of podcast rounds on The Torch. So I was on the post show with Zach a couple weeks ago on Raw. I was on the deep dive with Chris Matlin and Rich Fan on Saturday. Find me here. I'm just a lot of places these days. But yeah, on Twitter, B_Lee253. Get at me there and interact.
Man, chewing the scenery on the sign-off, this guy. but if you're doing a lot, you're doing a lot. It's WrestleMania weekend, folks. Weekend, we used to say weekend. When I was a kid, WrestleMania was just a day. WrestleMania week, folks. Everyone should be doing a lot. So that is it. And we will not see you in 7. We will see you in 1. Cheers.